This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. It's tax season, and we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's one you need to hear. $16.5 billion. That's how much the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud last year. Now here's a good number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. This hour, Jamie Metzl, former member of the WHO Advisory Committee, former National Security Council official, Clinton administration author. By the way, administration official and author of the book Super Convergence will be in studio. And with us right now is Congressman Jason Crow of Colorado. He's on the Select Committee on Intelligence, Armed Services, and ranking member in the Subcommittee on Intel. We're also following today, we're going to get an executive order calling for the end of the Department of Education. But of course, that's going to eventually go through Congress. So before we get to that, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I want to bring the schools back to the states. If they run their own education, they're going to do a lot better than somebody sitting in Washington, D.C. that couldn't care less about the pupils out in the Midwest.
Education front and center as Trump takes on the insanity of trans athletes and anti-Semitism, hitting the elite institutions in our colleges and hitting him in their wallets while announcing he's collapsing the Department of Education and sending the big bucks back to the states. Will this work?
Number two.
They've got that little stock app. I added Tesla to it to give me a little boost during the day. 225 and dropping. If you own one, we're not blaming you. You can take dental floss and pull the Tesla thing off, you know, and take out, just telling you.
Yeah, thank goodness he's not vice president. He's the governor of Minnesota. That's their problem. Let's root against an American company. Why not? Musk insanity continues as Teslas are defiled and torched, charging stations defaced and more. Why he's trying to balance our national budget, that's all, for free. Well, I believe this is one of the most alarming things to happen in our nation in decades.
Number one.
I couldn't believe there was any judge in the country that would want terrorists, a plane turned around over international waters, and return terrorists to the United States.
There we go. The fight around every corner. That's what Trump and Tom Homan are doing when it comes to illegal immigrants, especially criminals in our country. A fight with criminals, sanctuary cities, and the courts. It is ongoing. There's 64 injunctions right now. A fight I think that Trump believes he'll eventually win. Congressman Jason Crow, welcome back.
It's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Something else is new about the Trump era. 64 injunctions, 14, 15 the first time, 14 with Obama, 12, 6 with Bush. Why? Why do you think that is? Does it concern you that courts are now getting involved? Are they going to be legislating soon?
Well, it concerns me that courts have to get involved because the administration is not doing this according to the law in many cases. Now, there are some things that, you know, they're doing. They're moving fast, and there are actually areas of agreement. But there's a lot of areas where they are bypassing Congress, bypassing the courts. They're usurping people's due process, and the courts are saying, no, enough. You have to actually do this the right way.
In what way? For example, when it comes to trans athletes in right up your alley, you're a veteran. Are you still active?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Yeah. How do you feel about transgenders in the military? Because a judge just stopped that yesterday.
Yeah, I disagreed with the Trump administration's policy of removing trans service members from service. You know, what I believe is if you want to serve the country, you're able to raise your right hand and take the oath and put your life on the line. So long as you can meet the standards, if you can meet the standards, you should be allowed to serve.
So you believe that, but the Secretary of Defense believes that hurts camaraderie and continuity and gets away from the mission.
I don't think there's any evidence to support
that.
Have you ever served? I don't know because I haven't asked folks. You know, I didn't probe at the time. I don't recall that, but I have a lot of friends. I've served with a lot of people that have. You know, we're talking about 3,000 to 4,000 folks,
right?
At a time when we have a severe shortage in our military, and some of these service members are actually some of the most highly skilled, technically proficient in their areas, right? Space, cyber, high technology jobs. And we're going to push them out at a time when we need their skills. We need it for the national security. And we already have a major shortage of service members. It's the wrong thing to do.
How do you feel about transgenders in college sports, high school sports?
Well, you know, you actually look at when we look at any policy, like I'm a member of Congress, so I'm in the position of having to make broad-based policies. So the first thing you have to ask yourself is, how big of an issue is this? Right. And what we know, there's an organization called Save Our Sports, SOS, that has identified five people around the country, five instances through K-12 education where this has been an issue. The president of the NCAA.
What do you think? Are you comfortable with it?
Well, I'm getting to that. The president of the NCAA identified 12 people within NCAA sports for this decision. So it's a very small issue. We're talking about, you know, single digit instances. What I believe is in education and instances like that where they're highly fact-specific, I believe in local control. I believe that local school districts should be able to apply the facts to
What do you think? If you had a daughter, would you want him competing, let's say, in soccer, field hockey with a male?
It depends. What I'm saying is it depends on the facts, right? Every
no,
fact
I'm just giving you the
is
facts.
Different.
If you're 13 years old, 15 years old, you're a junior in high school, if you are a college Division I swimmer, should you be competing against men?
Every person and situation is different.
No, it isn't.
Right? No, they are.
No, people if you're are, a transgender, are if you're a male that's transitioning to a female, you should not be allowed to compete in women's sports,
all,
do you think?
All people are not created the same here, right? Like you were talking about different situations,
shouldn't
different people.
Should you be people. Fair to women?
What I think we need to do is put school districts and local communities in the position to apply the facts to individual circumstances.
Well, how's the NCAA doing
Colorado, let me say this. Yeah. You know, Colorado, we're a home rule state, right? Home rule and local control is extremely important to Westerners. And very important to us because we believe that, you know, when you're dealing with single digit issues, a couple of dozen here and there, that the people who are there on the ground are in the best position to apply the facts to the circumstances.
See, to me, it's universal. If you are the men competing against women, it doesn't work in anything. I'm not even sure in auto racing, you know, it's allowed. But there's more and more instances of this popping up. And if you just don't make a simple use logic, it's just not fair to women.
I don't think you can legislate something like this at the federal issue.
Don't?
You've taken an issue where literally the organizations that have been up the responsibility of looking at this issue have identified five people, 5 and 12, where this applies. This is a very small handful of folks.
If you just talk to Riley Gaines and the people that have joined the organization that have had different instances across the country, it's much more than single digits. And then when you have it pop up and then people defend it, it becomes a national issue. I just don't know. That's one issue I don't understand why Democrats are struggling with. Because if you have a daughter, you do not want them playing soccer against a male. You have the national team that can't beat an outstanding high school team. And we have the best female soccer team in the world.
I'm not struggling with it at all. And I don't think, you know, I don't think my colleagues are struggling with it at all. This is actually a pretty simple issue in my view. It's actually very simple.
Which is?
Which is this.
Which is trans men should
which
not play
this.
In
when
women's
you're
sports.
Dealing with, when you're dealing with very small numbers, single-digit issues, by the organizations that have actually taken this up, they've identified literally five instances where this has been an issue. You go to the communities that are closest to it, and they can make a decision based on the facts.
But they should know that when men should not be competing in women's sports. I mean, Martina Navratilova, of all people, came out and said, "You got to be kidding me with this."
Well, there are some circumstances in
which you should save these communities from themselves. These extremely liberal communities are going to have some trans men playing in women's sports, and some kid, like the volleyball kid at the State of the Union address, who took the volleyball to the head, and is still having some brain issues.
I believe in local control as much as possible, right? I don't think we need to have big government here coming in and telling local communities and school districts in my towns and cities how to handle, you know, very small numbers of cases that are highly fact specific. Yeah, I think this would be a perfect example
but
of
what
an
do
issue.
You think?
That's what I'm telling you.
Well,
what
no,
I'm
but
saying.
But you think it should be? But
what
does Jason Crow think?
Well, this is exactly what I think. I think that there are issues. I don't
but
believe.
But let's say you're a parent in the community
overreach.
And you see a trans man playing against your daughter, your niece. How would you feel about
that?
There are
some, what I'm telling you, Brian, is that it's fact specific. You have to look at the person, you have to look at the situation, you have to look at the physical characteristics, and then you have to apply that. And there are certainly some instances where it wouldn't be appropriate, and there are some instances where it would. What I think is that when you're dealing with issues like this,
when there are
some situations when you're dealing with one-off small cases, it's inappropriate at the federal level for Congress or anybody else to legislate something.
I think the numbers are higher, both to say. I just think it's very interesting for any parent or anybody that cares about women in sports. It's pretty easy. But let's talk about what happened over the weekend. TDA members, 261 strong, almost MS-13. Convicted criminals in our country were put into white jumpsuits, put on planes, and sent back to El Salvador, who were willing to take them at a cost of roughly $6 million. A district judge has ruled, no, I don't think so. Turn that plane around. The plane did not turn around. It landed. Now a judge wants to know exactly why the plane didn't turn around. And he wants to, I guess, bring them back and stop other flights. Are you comfortable with that?
Well, you have to, number one, if there are violent criminals or gang members and violent offenders in our streets, they need to be gone, period. Right? If these are dangerous people, then they need to be taken off of our streets and sent, either back home where they came from or whoever else.
You like
else
El Salvador as a third country.
Well, El Salvador has a lot of human rights problems and issues at play here, right? So we have to look at that as well. So that's number one. And there shouldn't be debate about that.
Good.
But we have to make sure that these are the people we're talking about, right? Due process does matter.
So if you were comfortable with the bios and the police rundown of what they did, you saw assault, rape, death, destruction, murder. If you saw that, you're comfortable with putting them flights and sending them back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just want to make sure it's
I want to make sure they're the right people. I'm going to make sure we have facts and data that we're not sweeping up innocent people and throwing them on planes with gang members and innocent people aren't being caught up. That is what's really important to me here.
But do you believe that law enforcement, for the most part, is not trustworthy? Because ICE turned them over, they rounded them up, and they put them on those planes and sent them back. Do you believe there was something part of that process that has proved faulty in the past?
I don't think that's the issue, but whether or not individual law enforcement are trustworthy or not. I don't think that's actually a responsibility that we should put on.
Do you think that we put innocent people on those planes?
I don't think that that's a responsibility that we should put on law enforcement. Right? I think we actually have protections, legal protections, judicial protections that relieve law enforcement of the responsibility. Like, I don't want to put on our cops, our sheriff's deputies, the responsibility of having to make those judicial decisions. That's not their job. Like, their job
but
is to
round up criminals.
Their job is to keep our community safe, the round
right.
up criminals,
so they just
and,
say,
and
listen,
to get them out.
Well, we got to get these guys out of here. El Salvador, Venezuela is hedging on taking their people back. So they picked El Salvador. MS-13 is El Salvador. TDA is not. Mm. So they sent them all back. Do you have a problem with that? Do you have a problem with El Salvador? Because they have ranked up all their gang members and put them into prison.
Isn't that place
an example of how to clean up your country?
El Salvador?
Yeah.
Well, there's been a lot of abuses in El Salvador. I can tell you that, right? There are human rights concerns. There are numerous examples and evidence that, due process, people's rights are not being respected in El Salvador. And I'm concerned about that, right? But let's get back to the real issue here. The real issue is we have to be smart enough and good enough as a country to differentiate between violent offenders and the need to get them out of our communities and off our streets, which we should all be able to agree on, versus the fact that we have due process and protections in place to protect the innocent. Right? That's what these are. All the constitutional protections are to protect the innocent, and we need to maintain those and uphold those so that innocent people don't get caught up in this.
Yeah, I just did not know that ICE rounding them up, people in prison, there was a doubt about their background, where they keep them in our prison or get them out of the country. So we would save money, get them out, and put them in solitary confinement. They're no longer a threat to us. I thought that would be key.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the issue about how unfair and untenable of a position it is to put law enforcement in the position.
But they do it every day.
What I'm saying here, Brian, is putting law enforcement in the position of rounding folks up and putting them on planes when there hasn't been the process that normally should exist to make sure that these are the right people and they're not pulling innocent people.
Right now,
that puts them in a terrible position.
But
if ICE goes to pick me up
and I'm hanging out in Harlem, which we have TDA members, and they go to pick me up, I know that they are criminals. I've been told, I've looked at this, I've been told by my commanding officer, go in there, you surround them, a sanctuary city here would make it tougher. They pull me out because I have been looked at as ICE, as somebody who committed multiple crimes and needs to be taken out. What is wrong about that?
Well, because in your hypothetical, you said, I've been told I know. So my question is, How do you know? And who has told you? And my point is this. If they usurp the normal process,
right,
where you check people, you vet them, you do the background checks, you do the verification, there's the due process, there's judicial review, then what you're doing is you're shifting that entire burden of that process on that officer or agent or their supervisor. They then become responsible for that. That's not their job, and it shouldn't be their job. That's why we have judges. That's why we have courts. That's why we have process. So that process exists not only to protect the innocent, but it also exists to protect the officers and agents.
But if you're here legally, are you supposed to get every rights of an American?
If people are here in the United States, you're entitled to due process.
But even as an illegal immigrant?
People that are here in the United States are entitled to due process. And you know why? Because it's due process that then determines status, whether or not you violate the law. So you have to go through that.
You realize we got like 20 million illegals here. 8 million came in under Joe Biden. So they were all going to go through due process?
Due process. Anybody in the United States is entitled to due process. And the reason why is that it's that determines what rights you have, what your status is, whether you're a violent offender or an innocent person. That is the first step in the process of sorting and making sure we're getting the right people.
So if this judge, you don't think has against El Salvador, you think that that judge feels as though they didn't get due process?
That's my understanding of the case, that there was not visibility and transparency in due process. So we need to make sure we're getting the right folks.
Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor, editor-at-large of The Spectator, and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. I'm inviting you to join in-depth conversations every week on the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Congressman Jason Crow is here from Colorado. Congressman, your thoughts on where we're at now with Ukraine and Ukraine and Russia?
Yeah, so one is this war has to end. It's brutal. It's devastating Ukraine. It's expensive. The lives lost, hundreds of thousands killed. It has to end, and like most wars, it's going to end at a negotiating table. Almost every war does, right? So it has to be negotiated, and I support the effort to try to do that. But here, we can't trust Vladimir Putin, right? We've known the guy for three decades. We know who he is. We know he's never kept a deal. We know he's not good for his word. He thinks that his role, his destiny, is to rebuild the Russian empire and that Ukraine is essential to that, and he's willing to do almost anything to accomplish that goal. So tell me how much we should trust the guy.
We need international troops at an agreed-on border, even though the invasion was illegal and it's not right. But on a practical level, we need, and the UN, UK, and France has agreed to do it. It should be a non-starter. That'll be the tripwire.
I think it's got to be European troops and security guarantee. America shouldn't do this. We shouldn't have American boots on the ground.
For UK and France,
it could be any combination of EU countries. If UK and France want to step up and do it, great. Right? I don't think the UN is in the ability to do that. I mean, UN has never really effectively been able to enforce any of these agreements, so I don't think that would work. But UK, France, Germany, so any combination of those are workable.
And we got to get those 20,000 to 30,000 kids back that was stolen.
We got to get the kids back. I mean, 30,000 Ukrainian kids kidnapped from Ukraine by Vladimir Putin in these indoctrination camps. I mean, this is an unbelievable crime.
There was 175 prisoners exchanged. Both sides say that's a good news. They've also agreed in principle not to hit energy and infrastructure.
Right.
Incremental.
It's incremental, but we also have to get Vladimir Putin to acknowledge that they have been hitting civilian infrastructure because he's denied it. They have been.
It's crazy. We're totally in agreement on that, and hopefully we're getting to that way. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What I will tell you is this judge has no right to ask those questions. You have one unelected federal judge trying to control foreign policies, trying to control the Alien Enemies Act, which they have no business presiding over. And there are 261 reasons why Americans are safer now. That's because those people are out of this country. The judge had no business, no power to do what he did.
That is Attorney General Pam Bondi talking about this judge who over the weekend said, turn that plane around. It's full of 261 MS-13 as well as TDA. It's hard to get my gang straight. They're heading over to El Salvador. Many from El Salvador, MS-13 in particular. Some from Venezuela who seem to have backpedaled on what they're doing. So now the judge wants by 12 o'clock today, when the plane took off, why didn't it turn around, and a series of questions leading to that. But the bigger question is, what about the rest of the worst of the worst? Illegal immigrants who have come here, gang members, to create havoc in our society. With me right now is Jamie Metzl, former member of the WHO, former national security event official in the Clinton years, and author of the book Super Convergence. Is the Attorney General right, Jamie?
Well, certainly it is right for anybody in the United States, including the Attorney General, to say we have a problem. The problem needs to be addressed. It's certainly right to say we had an election, and I'm a Democrat, but we had an election, and President Trump won the election, and that gives an authority to take steps. We also have a system of government of our three branches of government, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. And so if somebody thinks that we have a problem with the judiciary, we can't just say we're not going to listen to judicial rulings. We have a process for making appeals. That's why we have levels of judges. So it's fine for anybody to criticize anything, but I'm deeply concerned about at least if these statements continue to translate right into actions and we don't respect judicial rulings because we disagree with them, that's a path to ruin for everybody.
Right. But the ACLU, with the help of a group called Democracy Now!, brought the case to go to bat for TDA. Christina Pascucci was on Fox News at Light last night. She's a political and media strategist, Cut 5.
Was everyone on that plane a violent criminal, in fact? Because there have been cases where they say maybe they weren't and they didn't get their due process.
I haven't seen any of those cases. We've seen zero of those cases.
There's been one that was brought up where it was the guy, he had some tattoos, maybe were mistaken, and he didn't get the due process. It hasn't been proven either way, but it's been brought up.
So do you think that's enough to turn the plane around?
I don't do one thing or another, but what I will say is we have a system of due process, and that helps everybody. I have no clue who those people were on those planes. I give the president the benefit of the doubt. You know, very likely there were a whole lot of terrible gang members, maybe murderers. I have no idea. And I have no problem with taking a strong position in one way or another, including addressing the problem of illegal immigration and all kinds of people coming across our borders, and we have no idea who they are. For me, the broader issue is, what is the role of the federal judiciary in our system of government? Because we could flip any of these stories around. And everybody, we could all be on any side of this issue. That's what our founding fathers wanted to insert.
But do you know that President Trump said, you know, some of these judges should be impeached, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
John Roberts didn't call out the president directly,
right,
but said we should never bring that up. True. He feels that way, but he didn't do anything about it. So I will add this. He was also asked by Laura Ingraham, as well as other people in the random press conferences he has all day, is that, are you going to follow the law? He goes, oh, yeah, we're going to follow the law. And I know we're going to appeal. And I know we're going to appeal again.
Right.
And my big worry is that how many more flights of 261 of the worst of the worst are not going to be rounded up and be sent out because we're gumming up a situation. If it is just a matter of providing the police blotter on all these people that are going out, then just tell me the system that you want and do it. But to say turn the plane around?
Well, so what you called gumming up the system, our founding fathers recognized that deliberately they were adding inefficiency to our system of government. So, again,
slow it down. But you know there's no district judges. There's 600 district judges.
Right.
They're not mentioned in the Constitution.
So federal judges are mentioned in the Constitution. We have organized our federal judges in these levels, the district, appellate, and Supreme Court. And we have a system. And so by all means, if Congress wants to pass a law changing a whole lot of things, Congress can do that. But I just don't think that it is good for us, regardless of our political persuasions, to say, well, if we have something that even maybe you and I can agree it's a good idea, that regardless of what the judiciary says in our system, That should be disregarded. That's the principle I'm supporting.
Understood. And there's a bunch of different issues we can get into. Your thought about dissolving the Department of Education.
So the Department of Education does a lot of really important things, setting standards for education across the country. I don't support dissolving it, but I absolutely think that we should continually reform all of our government agencies, because government agencies, governments themselves, become sclerotic over time. That was the basic thesis of Edward Gibbon's great series of books, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. And so I think that we should try to reform agencies like that before we just dissolve
them. Part of reform giving the same amount of money but just giving it to the states?
That's one hypothesis, but I rather than jumping straight to that with such a radical act of just dissolving the entire agency, why don't we have a 6-month study and say, well, here are the goals. Mm-hmm. How do we best achieve those goals? I'm all for reform. We need it in our government. But just doing an executive order and dissolving agencies, whether it's the Department of Education or USAID, I think that does more harm than good. Even though there are problems with all of our agencies, that's the inherent nature of government.
40% of fourth graders can read on the basic level. 33% of eighth graders, 33% can read on their grade level. 40% of fourth graders perform proficient or advanced. 28% of eighth graders perform what they would categorize as advanced. So this does seem to be an emergency. And the one thing you have to say is that Trump didn't waste his time when he was out of office for 4 years. He seems to have ideas in mind how to fix things. Even if you disagree, 69% of fourth graders are basic below. So 70% of eighth graders are below level. So it's really concerning. And if you care about education, think it's the future of the country, don't you think a radical move like this would be almost necessary?
So, Brian, I can summarize our entire national education system in two words. We suck. We are totally failing the young people in this country, particularly the poorest and most vulnerable people. But really, everybody is in trouble, because we're all in one society together. I'm all for even radical reforms of our education system. But rather than do things so quickly, mm-hmm. why don't we do things just kind of quickly by saying, all right, here is the plan of what we're doing, and here's why we think X, Y, or Z will be better.
So I know what you're saying in theory. If it was a Jamie Metzl company, I'm not going to come in and change things I just took over. But when you do meet with people and you have a program, when you take over, your research was done before you got there.
But present,
and especially a guy that was there for 4 years. So he's like, listen, I tried it the other way. I think it is time to do the thing we've talked about since Jimmy Carter put it in place, and that is take it down and farm it out to the states. And then we see what states have the plan that works, so parents can make a choice where they live, and then we can maybe put pressure on the states, red or blue, to do things differently.
So that is a perfectly valid hypothesis. The way I would like – I'm not saying wait 100 years. What I'm saying is President Trump just got here. Maybe this work has been done. Maybe there is a theory of the case. Maybe there are all kinds of plans. What I would rather see is to say, is somebody, and whether it's McMahon or Trump or somebody, to say, all right, here is our plan. Here's what we are seeking to do. Here's why we think it will be helpful. Here's what we think we can achieve over the next 4 years. And here are the steps that we're going to take in order to get from here to there. Then you could get people having a reasonable conversation and feel like, oh, we're part of this process.
I'm telling you right now, I talked to – they feel like everyone's just dug in. They're going to get their political sides. We're going to lose this if you don't do this. You have lobbyists come in. We don't want to lose control here. That's why he went in with the business attitude. I'm not taking input. I've done the study. This is what I'm going to do. And if it doesn't work – You go get another building that says Department of Education when the next person comes in.
I'm not saying necessarily input, although I believe input is helpful. I'm saying communications. Even if this was my own company and I said, we're going to do this radical change, I would say, here is why. And here's why you, who are the people who are part of this company or part of this world, here's why I'm asking you to go along with me. But absolutely, the teachers' union has done so much harm to students by focusing on the teachers' interests and not on the students'. We have massive problems that must be addressed for all of our good. I just am concerned that they haven't articulated what they're trying to do. So you see the destruction without the plan for construction.
And here's the point of dissonance for me.
the most dedicated people I know are teachers.
Yes, obviously.
Right?
Yes.
They're pulling money out of their pocket. Oh. Okay, we don't have a budget for this, but I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah.
I worry about the kids at 5 o'clock at night like I do at 7 in the morning. Yes. You worry about what happens when they go home. So that's what I worry, that people are getting the wrong message. That's why if I'm Trump, I tour the country with Linda McMahon saying that this is the grade level I need to get. Guys, we need to go up 15 points in 3 years. Can we do it?
Yes.
While empowering teachers talking past the union.
I mean,
that's what I would love to do.
We're making the exact same point, and I completely agree. Because we have a crisis in this country that must be addressed.
And I think that his way of addressing it is, let's stop what's happening in Washington. I want to get to another area.
Yep.
And then the last area, I want to talk about your views on Ukraine and what's happening over in the Middle East. And that is what's happening to Tesla dealerships across the country, Tesla cars, as well as showrooms, as well as people who just go to the mall.
Yeah,
could not be more offended by this and alarmed. There's so many apolitical people who just want to drive an electric car, many of which are Democrats, who say, well, I'm helping. This is a cool looking car. It's the number one electric car in the world. So I want to get it. And now I'm not going to send my kid out in it because I don't want their window smashed.
Yeah.
I don't want them run off the road.
Yeah.
How is this acceptable?
Oh, it's totally unacceptable. I'm against all of this vandalism. I'm against people who are putting swastikas on these on the Teslas or destroying the dealership, which is terrible. I'm against these horrible people who are putting the spray painting the Free Palestine baloney all over. I mean, all of these people, we need to have a system of laws and respect. We have a political process. That's why we live in a democracy, so that we can debate these things. I am not at all a fan of Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. If I had a Tesla, I would probably sell it at this point because I don't like what Elon Musk is doing. But I do not like what Elon Musk is doing because I just feel like, again, I was served, as you mentioned, in the Clinton administration. The Clinton administration
cut $400 billion?
Huge amounts of money. Cut 500,000 federal employees through a process. The way that that DOGE went into USAID, the way that they went into IRS, I think it's profoundly undemocratic, even though, as I said before, I am sympathetic to the idea that governments on their own just keep growing and need to be cut. And those cuts can be harsh and they can upset people. But this process doesn't seem disciplined. The other thing I don't like about Elon Musk is he's functioning as Donald Trump's political enforcer. And so
in what way?
So basically what he's doing is pouring money into primary campaigns against particularly Republicans who would vote against Donald Trump. And I think it's legal in our system. But we have such a crisis in our campaign finance infrastructure.
That's the least controversial thing.
Yeah.
But what he's trying to do is, and I think it's almost necessary, is that if you have a political, I know Bill Clinton did in the 90s. I think it's a much different time now.
Yeah.
The minute you, Republican or Democrat, go in and cut a program that affects their district, Republican or Democrat,
yes,
closing military bases, the most obvious example. I'm a Republican. We got to make sure our defense budget is reallocated towards the challenges of today. Oh, we're closing a base in your district? Don't do that.
Right.
Really? I thought you – don't do that. But if I have an outside force hired to come in and say what's best for the country, working for not a lot of money, or in Elon Musk's case, zero, you come in there from a clinical standpoint, and not only does the politician not get what he wants or she get what he wants, they have plausible deniability. I couldn't control it. It wasn't me. It was a outside efficiency expert that decided this is best for that industry.
Yeah. So
the minute politics get involved, it's not going to be effective.
It's true. But look at base closures. We actually did it after the Cold War. We did it by bringing Democrats and Republicans together. And there was a massive bill that everybody had to vote yes or no. And it distributed the pain. And so we actually closed a lot of bases. If we had a clinical process where people were going in and saying, all right, here's where the fat is in our government, and there's tons of fat, and here's our analysis. But what I've seen so far about DOGE, it doesn't seem like it's based on the kind of thoughtful analysis you're describing. I've not been there, no.
You would love it because there's really no flowery phrases. There's no look at this.
Yeah.
It is just clinical program, cut.
And yet the New York Times analyzed those, and there were just so many mistakes in those exact figures.
Well, I mean, there were some mistakes in figures, but overall they admit there's mistakes. But if half of it are true, politicians would have held on to that in many cases.
No, they could, we have a problem of our government becoming ever more sclerotic.
I want to talk a little Ukraine on the other side. Brian Kilmeade.
Breaking news, the latest headlines, exciting commentary.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and I got to get to have Jamie Metzl here, foreign policy. He's got fantastic context and perspective. His book is still out, Super Convergence. Jamie, your thoughts about where we're at with the U.S.-Russia talks? U.S.-Russia-Ukraine talks.
Yeah, so we all have to admit, at least for people like me on the outside, I don't know everything that's happening. My concern is that the Trump administration has been too tough on the Ukrainians and not tough enough on the Russians.
Just to update everyone, in our conversation yesterday, yes. Zelensky, both sides said this is progress, and they both agreed not to hit each other's energy and infrastructure.
Yeah,
and there was a prisoner exchange. Go ahead.
There was a prisoner exchange, but the Russians were doing an attack on Ukrainian energy assets at exactly that same time. So it is my personal view that Putin is playing a double game, that he thinks that he can lay this out, extend this process, and get a lot of benefits. So I hope that the Trump administration will push hard against Putin like they've done against Zelensky. Maybe there is an opportunity for something here. I hope that happens, but I also hope that Trump isn't getting played by Putin.
How do you feel about Israel going back into Gaza at this hour? They're still going for mid-level Hamas fighters. It tends to be a little bit more surgical, much like the Hezbollah operation.
You know, war sucks. People get hurt in war. It is my personal view that Hamas should immediately surrender unconditionally and release all the hostages. When they started doing these propaganda shows and humiliating the hostages, when they started playing out the negotiations, they were inviting more war. Israel has no other choice than to play than to play tough. And actually, that's, you know, as you can tell, I'm not a huge fan of President Trump in a whole lot of areas, but President Trump has boxed in Hamas because they can't get away with the same BS. And now they're going to have to either stand, or I think they should surrender unconditionally, release all the hostages.
Iran has 2 months to get back to Trump. What do you think they'll say?
I hope that they do the exact same thing. The jig is up, and having a tough guy president isn't great, but in some situations it's
helpful.
You like
it. Jamie Metzl, thanks so much.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being there, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm here in New York, 48th and 6th, Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Interesting, yesterday I was talking to Sean Duffy, who used to work at Fox, now the great transportation secretary. He said, hey, guys, I'm not giving you any more money until you start cleaning up the subways. It's too dangerous. Why am I paying you all this money? Why are you encouraging everyone to use mass transportation? And it's a war zone down there. I think since they did the no cash bail, I think crime is up 156%. Mark Thiessen is standing by at the bottom of the hour. Chris Sununu. I want to see if the former governor wants to be the next senator from New Hampshire. He said no once. I wonder if he'll say it again. We'll discuss him with that because we do have a retiring senator over in New Hampshire. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I want to bring the schools back to the states. If they run their own education, they're going to do a lot better than somebody sitting in Washington, D.C. that couldn't care less about the pupils out in the Midwest.
That is President Trump. Education front and center. He takes the insanity of trans athletes and anti-Semitism hitting the elite institutions where it hurts, in their wallets, while announcing he's collapsing the Department of Education and sending all the dollars to the states. Not cutting it, sending it out. Will this work?
Number two.
They've got that little stock app. I added Tesla to it to give me a little boost during the day. 225 and dropping. If you own one, we're not blaming you. You can take dental floss and pull the Tesla thing off, you know, and take out, just telling you.
Tim Walz, so glad he is now vice president. Musk insanity continues as Teslas are defiled and torched, charging stations defaced and more. why he's trying to balance our national budget. That's all his approach is. Why I believe this is one of the most alarming things to happen in our nation in decades.
Number one.
I couldn't believe there's any judge in the country that would want terrorists, a plane turned around over international waters, and return terrorists to the United States.
He doesn't believe they're terrorists, it seems, Tom Homan. Fight around every corner. That's what Trump and Tom Homan are doing when it comes to illegal immigrants, especially criminals in our country. A fight with the criminal sanctuary cities and the courts. That's what's happening at a time, at a pace in our country we have not seen before. I bet you Trump can win most of these fights because I think they're armed up to do it legally. Mark Thiessen joins us now. Mark, 64 injunctions on the Trump agenda. It is not even April yet. That is almost equal to what we faced since the 1960s. He faced 15 injunctions the first time around. What's going on here?
It's the new lawfare. So, like, you know, for the last 8 years, they've been weaponizing the justice system to destroy Donald Trump, and they failed. They couldn't destroy him. And so now they're weaponizing the justice system to try and stymie his presidency. This is the new lawfare. Look, you have to fight it out in court. In the case of the plane carrying those people out, the order came while they were out over international waters, and so the court's jurisdiction doesn't flow outside the country. So I don't know that they had any jurisdiction to stop that. But the fact that the problem that the left has is that they are on all these things. They're on the wrong side of 80-20-70-30 issues, right? So 86%, New York Times poll, 86% of Americans want to deport all illegal aliens with criminal records. And so they turn around and sue to stop Trump from deporting aliens with criminal records. It's insanity. It's not just this. It's, you know, they're standing out and fighting for foreign aid, and they're fighting to keep illegal aliens in the country, and they're fighting against DOGE and stopping cutting waste spending and abuse. It's like it's like a party on a kamikaze mission to try and tank its polling, and it shows. They're at 30%, 29%, 28% in every poll in their approval ratings, and they're going to keep going down if they keep it up.
I think so, too. The Musk agenda really has got me. Now, if you don't want to buy stock, I see it. But now you're torching charging centers. You're torching dealerships. Are you throwing chairs through showroom windows? You're stopping Tesla from going to car shows. What is going on here? This is totally out of control.
It is, but this is what the left does. You know, if they don't get their way, they set things on fire. that's their philosophy. It's unbelievable that you would take, you know, and just it's just so funny. Like a few years ago, he was their hero. You know, they loved him. This is the most successful element of their environmental agenda was making electric cars cool. And that's what he managed to do. He managed to make electric cars cool, and now they're torching them. It's like they're torching their own agenda as they do this. And over what? Over the fact that he's trying to cut waste, fraud, and abuse out of the federal government, that he's cutting foreign aid, these are all things that are popular with the American people. Super majorities want him to do this, and they're you know, acting like terrorists.
So Jimmy Kimmel thinks it's funny. And Governor Tim Walz says this, cut 16.
Saying on my phone, I don't know, some of you know this on the iPhone, they've got that little stock app. I added Tesla to give me a little boost during the day. 225 and dropping. So, and if you own one, we're not blaming you. You can take dental floss and pull the Tesla thing off, you know, and take out, just telling you.
So he said, really, Musk came back and said, really, to lift me up, I walk by and see Vice President Vance every day. That lifts me up. God bless. And it was a good comeback. But why Governor Tim Walz thinks that's a responsible thing to say about an entrepreneur without peer and a American company that his state has invested $1.6 million in. Or $160 million, a significant amount.
Yeah, so I mean, the pensions of all of his state workers and all the teachers in the state. You know, they claim to love the teachers and the teachers unions. The teachers unions are getting hit by this. You know, when Tesla stock goes down, retirees across America see their pensions go down. This is self destructive. And, you know, it's funny. This is the guy who told us that J.D. Vance was weird. I think it's kind of weird to want the pensions of your state employees to be decimated because you don't like the owner of a company.
So this is again worries me. As Joe Lonsdale said to me on Fox and Friends, he goes, this means CEOs have to double and triple down. You cannot be intimidated from helping out government. He says that he has had his Palantir and other companies that he's been with protested because he likes Donald Trump and has supported conservative causes. So I think this is just so alarming on multiple levels. How do you feel Doge is functioning? Right now it's got 40% approval rating.
Yeah, it's doing well. I mean, what he's doing is he's lifting rocks and finding creepy crawlies under there that the Washington establishment doesn't want to be exposed. I mean, USAID, it was leaked. They have a plan to reform USAID, not to cut all the spending, but to put it under the State Department, rename it the U.S. Department of Humanitarian Assistance, and put it under the State Department and make sure it's being spent in advance of our foreign policy interests. What he's uncovered at USAID is that it became a slush fund for left-wing NGOs who are pursuing their agenda. You know, it's funny. If you talk to supporters of AID, they actually don't call it USAID. They call it AID. In the vernacular, because they don't like the U.S. part. They don't want to be under the direction of the Secretary of State and advancing U.S. foreign policy interests. They just want to spend the money on stuff that they think is good. And so you want to do that? Go work for the Gates Foundation. You know, go work for some of these. Go work for George Soros if you want to spend their money pursuing your left wing agenda. This is the taxpayers' money. The reason we spend it is to advance U.S. foreign policy interests with soft power, and it absolutely ought to be under the control of the Secretary of State to make sure it's doing that.
Mark, how do you feel the first round of negotiations with Vladimir Putin went? Since then, we know that they've agreed not to target each other's infrastructure and energy, and Zelensky confirmed 175 soldiers and 22 defenders have been released. And evidently, there's some stuff on X that says one of the largest POW exchanges has taken place and showed a picture of men with Ukrainian flags draped over their shoulders.
Yeah, we're making progress. Donald Trump is making progress. Look, the Ukrainians came to the table in Riyadh and they proposed a partial ceasefire of air and sea ceasefire, and they wanted security guarantees, and we told them no conditions, and they said okay. Unconditional ceasefire. And then they went to Putin, and Putin basically doesn't want a ceasefire, but he knows that if he says no to Donald Trump, then he's going to suffer the same maximum pressure campaign that crushed the Iranian economy when we withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal. And so he doesn't want that, so he's saying yes to a partial ceasefire to avoid suffering that for the full wrath of Donald Trump. He doesn't want a ceasefire. He doesn't want to end the war. He wants Ukraine, and he's going to try and drag this out. And at some point, Trump is going to have to decide: is he serious? Are the words following the actions following the words, or do we need to get tough with this guy? And I think it's almost inevitable that at some point we're going to have to start squeezing Putin.
Actually, just a side note: Ukraine is now deploying a machine gun toting robot. You got to see this thing right to their front lines. We're watching the future of war fighting in real time. We see the sophistication of drones. In real time. Now it looks like Ukraine is making them on their own. So they really become their own fighting force. They're just not big enough. Lastly, it looks like Iran is going to answer the president's letter saying that you got 2 months to decide to get rid of your nuclear program. What do you think's happening there?
Well, first on the point we made about Ukraine, that they defeated the Soviet Black Sea, the Russian Black Sea fleet without having a navy of their own with sea drones. That they made themselves, sea drones that they sunk the Moskva, they sunk a third of the Russian Navy. Taiwan ought to be watching that, because that's how you defend Taiwan, with sea drones preventing the Chinese from crossing the Taiwan Strait. In terms of Israel, look, Israel has never been weaker thanks to Bibi Netanyahu. They tried to strike Israel twice. They didn't. A single missile didn't succeed in hitting anything. They shot them all out of the sky. And Israel retaliated, took out all of its air defenses, all of its ballistic missile capabilities. There's a window now where Iran is completely vulnerable. And so Trump is using that window to squeeze them, but he's not going to let the window close. He's not going to let them reconstitute their capabilities. They're either going to have to give up their nuclear program, or we're going to end it for them. And I think that's the exact right position to take.
I guess so. We hit the Houthi rebels again last night. We've also shunk one of the Iranian spy ships. It's not getting much publicity. And we also see that Israel has moved into Gaza. What do you think the end game is now with this president supporting this prime minister?
I think Bibi's got to be less cautious and just go for it. Destroy these people. Because, Donald Trump gave them a chance to peacefully hand over the hostages and end this thing peacefully. And they're refusing to release the rest of the hostages, including an American who's still being held by them. And I think everybody's come to the conclusion that this is it. They're not giving up any more hostages. And so now we've got to finish the job. This can't end until Hamas is absolutely destroyed and driven out of Gaza.
Well, we'll see what happens now because they're going back to Jeddah to move this forward about the Russia-Ukraine thing. And then with Iran, I'll tell you, I'm talking to General Keane, who's not pro-war. He's pro-practical. For 40 years, they've been our enemy. And now they, for the first time, have no air defense. They've provoked Israel. We gave them the 2,000-pound bombs. And they are an unpopular government who the region, the Gulf states, despise. They lost their one ally in Syria. They have another ally in Russia. If we wait too long, I'm worried about a mutual defense pact with China and Russia. This is a window, Mark. I'm not pro-war, but I'm pro-practical.
Well, they can't fight a war. Because there's nothing they can do to us. As you said, they've lost their air defenses. They've lost their ballistic missile capability. They've lost their ally in Syria. They've lost their terrorist proxies, Hamas and Hezbollah. And right now, we're destroying their last terrorist proxy, the Houthis. They've got nothing. They've never been more strategically naked. They won't stay that way for long. You're absolutely right. So there's a window here where you offer them a way to do it peacefully, but completely, or we take it out. And this is the moment where they can't retaliate. So I would take it if they don't act.
Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Take care.
You got it. And pick up the Washington Post. You'll see him all over the channel, too. He's a fellow at the AEI. Back in a moment. I see you up there in Julie and Dayton and Portland. I'm coming to St. Louis on Saturday night. We're going to roll 8 o'clock local, 9 o'clock on Fox Nation. It's going to be exciting. History, liberty, and laughs. We'll get to your calls. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Democrats were big supporters of Tesla and of electric vehicles until Elon Musk decided to vote for Donald Trump. So we would like Democrats to also come out and condemn this heinous violence that we have seen. And I believe the Attorney General has said she's investigating these incidents as acts of domestic terrorism.
Good job. That's the press secretary coming out, looking at the assault on Elon Musk's company Tesla. He owns 13% of it, but he had everything to do with the design and the success. And the autonomous vehicles is his focus. Cabs are next. He also, as Howard Lutnick brought up last night, before I get to the phones, I want you to hear this. Howard Lutnick says, go and check out Tesla's website. You might say to yourself, I don't want an electric car, but you're gonna want what he's working on now. Cut 17.
Whether today's the bottom or not, I tell you what, Elon Musk is probably the best person to bet on I've ever met. And I think we all know that. I mean, gosh, in the same week that he saves astronauts with his rockets that he invented, imagine that. He's building the coolest robots you've ever seen. Go online and look up Optimus. It is the coolest thing you've ever seen. We're all going to be buying robots. They're going to cost about $30,000. You're going to be buying a Tesla robot, and anybody who doesn't buy a Tesla robot is going to be silly. No one's going to be keying anything. Elon Musk is the best entrepreneur and technologist in America.
Here you go. Julie, you're in FM News Talk 97.1 in St. Louis, where I'll be Saturday night. Hey, Julie, what's on your mind?
Hey, I'm going to be there with my husband
nice.
And two other people.
Well,
is there any way we can meet you?
Absolutely. Well, do you have the VIP tickets?
Well, we bought floor seats, so we splurged.
Oh, that's
but
good.
I don't know that they're VIP.
Julie, so. Afterwards, I'll be signing books out in the lobby. How's that? And I'll get a chance to meet you.
Oh, all
and we'll
right.
make sure hey, Allison got, will be I there. Got, okay. Allison will be awesome. There, and we'll make sure to make sure you find her, and we'll know because you call all the time. You're one of the most dedicated
thank
listeners.
You. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Can I make one quick point?
Yep.
Okay. So, yes, Tim Walz deserves to be criticized for talking down Tesla when his state pension fund owns Tesla stock, but it goes way broader than that. He and Jasmine Crockett talking down Tesla, their constituents own Tesla stock in mutual funds. So these are middle-class people
True.
Who own Tesla stock in their retirement funds, and they want their constituents to lose money. And I really think that is a line of attack on the crazy Democrats that we need
I know.
To broaden it.
My feeling is that's true, too. But also, if they start selling it out of the mutual funds, it's going to hurt them even more. Chris in Portland, Oregon. Chris.
Yeah, Brian, thanks for taking my call. I have a question that I haven't heard anybody ask. So if you have these judges tossing out Trump's executive orders, why couldn't you have a judge before somebody tossing it out saying this executive order of Trump's is great, we like it, blah, 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 blah. And if that other judge tried to throw the same order out, you have the first judge in the first position to say, no, it's fine. Or vice versa, you have the judge say it's not up to par, and another judge could say, yeah, I think it's fine.
I know. I know, Chris, we're just used to this process. Why does it always have to be on everything? On everything. What's the sense of being president if not one thing you do is not, he's not being sued because of it? Nothing. Time does matter once in a while, don't you think?
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We cannot continue to be on the defense reacting to this.
We've
got to go on the offense. We got to meet people where they are. You got to respect people you disagree with. Even, and you can't just dismiss people. This
How
notion
do you fight
of,
it?
It's, and well, this notion of
I think
of
I
text.
Can kick most of their I do that. If they want to, I know I can run them, but I don't know if we're going to fall into that place where we want to. Okay, we challenge you to a WWE fight here type of thing.
So that was Governor Walz obviously saying the wrong thing, which he's great at. With Gavin Newsom, who's trying to rehab his image and portray himself as a moderate. The problem is he's not acting like a moderate. He's still got a job. But on with Tim Walz yesterday, this has been the worst reemergence of a candidate to remind us everything we didn't like about him the first time, why they buried him on the ticket after they named him, knowing he was such a disaster. Now he's out strutting around like he thinks he's the heir apparent. Governor Chris Sununu was the 82nd governor of New Hampshire and joined us in studio. Governor,
I
great
love
to see
Tim
you.
Walz. Let's get Tim Walz out there all the time,
right,
because it makes us look so damn good.
So you said you like him as a person.
He's a nice man. Look, he's a sweet guy, but he has no idea what he's freaking doing. And the more he's out there, you know, he almost trying to backtrack on the woke stuff and identity politics that that entire party drives themselves on. They're all over the place. It's just a great example of how dysfunctional the party is at this point, Democrat Party.
But how could you be that detached from reality to think that this is the swaggering Democrat that's going to lead you
through
the wilderness?
Welcome to politics. Look, these guys, I was a governor. I get it. They surround themselves with all these people that go, oh, we have the fundraising list now. You were on the national stage. You have this massive following. Look how many likes you got on Facebook. Facebook or Instagram or whatever the hell it was. And so the teams around them push you up because, by the way, they just want the money, right? Because they saw all the money that Kamala and her team made.
They made over $1 billion.
Right, and wasted. And
but
they all want to be part
paid.
Of that.
But yeah. You get paid, and a lot of times there's incentives built to the consultant's contract.
Of course. Of course they want to place the ads, they want to promote, they want to run. They all get paid for doing this. So it's very easy for a politician that's been on that national stage to have his entire team puff them up as if there's a second round. God bless it. Go for it, brother.
Here's Tim Walz. This is the whole thing about what they're going after Tesla. It's getting real serious. I think to stop it, not going to stop totally, but it's organized.
Oh, completely organized.
It's clearly
really
organized.
Awful.
This isn't a bunch of people losing their temper. This is organized. They have a day. March 29th is going to be the day to attack stations, dealerships,
and it's an extension
drivers.
Of what we've seen, right? It goes back to 2020. If you disagree, we're not just going to, quote, cancel you. We're going to break your businesses. We're going to break your windows. We're going to protest on campuses. We're going to commit violence. We're going to incite others to have acts of violence. That's the way the Democrat Party acts. And that is why they have, what, a 22% approval rating or something, you know, right now. And that's by – and by the way, that 22% are probably getting paid by the Democrat Party to say they like them.
You know, you have really good instincts. You grew up in a political family. I think Governor Tim Walz has the worst instincts you can imagine. More proof. Cut 16.
Saying on my phone, I don't know, some of you know this on the iPhone, they've got that little stock app. I added Tesla to it to give me a little boost during the day. 225 and dropping. So – And if you own one, we're not blaming you. You can take dental floss and pull the Tesla thing off, you know, and take out, just telling you.
Yeah, so we don't want to get rid of useless bureaucrats in Washington, but we want to see the dismantling of a major company that hires hundreds of thousands of people across this country and has pensions and future savings all linked to it. We just want to see the downfall of that because we disagree with them politically. Again, I go back to Elon. I like what Elon's doing at Doge. I just think they haven't partnered him with the right messenger. Remember when they put him together with Vivek?
Yeah.
Vivek and I don't see eye to eye on a whole lot. But they needed to put Elon together, I'll just say, with a politician, with someone that knows how to message to smooth this stuff out. Because he's staying up nights. He's working his ass off. Lord knows he doesn't have to be doing this for America, but he believes in it. They've said, been very open. All right, we're going to break some stuff. It's not all going to go perfect. But when you know that, you need to drive the messaging. Trump does okay. Caroline Levitt, love her. She's fantastic. I think she's handling the world on her shoulders. But within that organization, they need better messaging coming out of it to smooth it. Today's another good example, if I could just jump topics a little. They're going to do what they do on the U.S. Department of Education. Great move. But they have to message it strong to parents and teachers to be like, look, the money's still coming, right? It's just going to have more flexibility, more opportunity at a local level, more empowerment of choice for families. They got to be strong about that. And I think tonight, right, I think the secretary's on Fox tonight at 6 p.m. is my understanding. And I think Linda McMahon's terrific and will hopefully provide that runway, if you will, so to ease some of the tension. Because when you don't do that, you get all this extremism on the other side,
right,
and inciting violence. It's crazy.
Like we're trying to hurt kids. Here's the other thing. I would make it – I know the president's numbers oriented. I would do a national campaign to let people understand the teachers aren't the bad guys.
That's right.
We know they don't get paid enough. And we know many of them pulling money out of their own pocket to get their bulletin boards going. They think about their kids after they get on the bus. They worry about the families. They get to know everyone. And I feel like sometimes they get caught up in the negativity with the union.
With the union.
And I would go around and meet some of these teachers and say this. Right now, we're 69% of fourth graders are below reading level. 70% of eighth graders below math level. 61% of fourth graders are below math as well. 40% of fourth graders read on level. 33% of eighth graders read on level. These are our numbers. Let's build. Let's get these numbers up collectively. I want to come back in 18 months. I want to hear see an improvement in 1 year.
That's right. And so
back to phonics and some of the teaching methods that experts tell us are much more effective.
You've nailed it, right? What is the value out of a federal Department of Education? None. Nobody can tell you what it is. What is the value at? Have we been knocking out of the park with U.S. education of the last 25 years? No, not at all. So by returning that control back to the locals, you have, as a governor, I can tell you, I needed more flexibility with my free and reduced lunch program. I needed more flexibility
for
with
your
my
what?
Free and reduced lunch.
Free and
right?
reduced. Yeah. Because you had poor kids who couldn't afford it?
And they'd say, well, here's a grant, but you can't use it for this or that. Or I needed more flexibility for special ed programs. Here's a grant, but it only can be used this or that way. There were literally thousands of pages of rules and regulations. Even though there's a law that says the U.S. Department of Education can't tell you how to teach your kids, they create all the grants and programs and strings on it in a way that it completely locks you up. And Mississippi should do what they need because it might be very different than the social or emotional or academic needs of New Hampshire or New York or California. Look, Gavin Newsom is on the complete opposite side of things of me politically. But I would argue the parents and teachers of California know what their schools need a lot more than a bunch of bureaucrats in D.C. So let the states compete. Let the states fight it out instead of this whole equity, we're all going to be the same. That No Child Left Behind stuff, it didn't work. That nationalized testing stuff, doesn't really work. It's all about having that local control and that empowerment to the individual teachers and parents to drive your kids.
Right.
Education.
I'd love to see that. And then on a numbers game to see if we can raise it up collectively. Have a big thing. Like, let's have a plan. Then let's see the areas that are problematic that are bringing us down.
That's right.
So talking about L.A. for a second. Los Angeles Times says L.A.'s financial problems are so bad they're exploding into a full-blown crisis as of yesterday, with the city's top budget official announcing that next year's shortfall is just about $1 billion, making layoffs inevitable. Now, is part of that making Medi-Cal, everybody eligible for Medi-Cal, doesn't care regardless of citizenship? This is destroying their healthcare system, keeping people out of there unless you're ultra rich? So, I mean, these are all self-inflicted wounds.
Self-inflicted wounds. And so this is where this is the optimist in me. I'm an engineer. I believe in a feedback response system. I believe when you allow things to be localized, when they break it, the citizens rise up and say, we're going to fix it. We're going to go in a different direction because we have to. And so you got to let that play out a little bit, right? The best way to learn is to fail in California. Is failing all over the place. Now, it's tough for those citizens, but hopefully they feel empowered, they get out, and they have some type of movement. We saw the DA in LA get moved out. Heck, we even remember a few years ago we saw the school board members, the woke school board members in San Francisco get kicked out of office. So there are glimmers.
Ches Bourdin or whatever his name is.
And what happened in California? They've gained Republicans in the House of Representatives in the past couple of years.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So they've actually gained.
And they're trying to recall their mayor.
That's right. So there are glimmers here where there is pushback. What happened in the Latino community? They're saying the working class community, the African-American community, they voted for Trump. More than any other Republican in history for president. So there's working class Americans saying we've had enough, right? You've conned us for long enough, Democrat Party. You failed us, and now we're going to make a change. So I am hopeful that with all these crises that are coming in California and some of these liberal states, that I'm not going to say it's just a conservative issue, but it's a people issue. The people are rising up and saying, no, these guys are getting it done. They're not afraid to make tough decisions. They're not wasting billions of dollars. I mean, think that billion alone is less than the homelessness effort in Los Angeles. Yet it's still the biggest homelessness crisis in the country.
And I believe you put $100 million aside to Trump-proof his state.
To Trump-proof the state.
Because he wants to be able to fight them in the courts, and he wants to get elite lawyers and law firms to do it.
That's it. And look.
So what do you say to that? Is that where you want your money going?
It's crazy. And nobody buys that. So that's where I always go back to messaging. Let people know what's happening. Set the expectations where they are and let them know the empowerment they have to change their own system.
So the other thing what is your view on Gavin Newsom doing this podcast?
Boy, I appreciate what he's trying to do to try to change the image. But you brought it up exactly. He's still got a job to do and he's still failing miserably at the job. The fires, the homelessness crisis, the lack of mental health services in that state. Look, you can't blame a single Republican for any of that, right? Right? It's the worst results. And America is now getting results driven, not just politics driven. And that's where he's going to fall apart. He's going to drain a lot of money out of the Democrat Party because he's going to demand it. He's going to kind of be a flash in the pan, I think, to run for president. You're going to have Pritzker running, probably Shapiro, maybe Whitmer. You're going to have some good governors, good, quote unquote, strong people that understand some of these middle of the road states running for president. So it is not an easy path for Gavin.
Right.
But he's a phony at the end of the day.
He is.
I mean, I think he is. Look, I don't dislike him as a person.
But he's an actor. He's an actor.
I don't dislike him as a person, but I think his politics come off as phony. And if he can become a little more genuine and maybe, tussle the hair, maybe some Democrats will start coming his way.
A couple of things. You have to earn your moderate credentials. Fetterman's got him, right?
Oh, sure.
Fetterman's got him.
He puts it on
the
line.
Joe Manchin hasn't. People might get upset on the right, but if it wasn't for him, there wouldn't be a filibuster. Republicans might like that now. No filibuster. We have two more states. So cinema, whatever. But he has none right. You can't just say, I'm going to listen to Republicans. He's still letting people change their gender without telling their parents. He's still letting them play in sports and fighting, suing families that are trying to keep girls in girls' sports. We still know his homelessness has been an epic fail. All the money's wasted.
I hope he's the nominee. Because I would just keep running pictures of Los Angeles and San Francisco neighborhoods constantly. It would be the easiest campaign to win.
But do you realize also how he can win? If he just started governing like a moderate.
But he won't. And by the way, his legislature won't allow him to.
Right.
Either.
But that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Even if you're insincere, guys, you know what? We got to change. We got to change this. He's going to cut regulation to help people in the Pacific Palisades and Altadena. Really? What about the rest of the state? If you know the red tape is so bad, why are you just letting people then have all their stuff destroyed?
That's right.
And by the way, I talk to people out there, rich people, and evidently you got to get this green pass in order to scrape your own property. And if you don't get the green pass and they don't change the rules, if they try to scrape your property and it's not there, they could lose their licenses. So everything, I don't care if you're rich and famous, Everyone is so confused
and this
and
is the
frustrated.
Problem. You've hit it right on the head. No matter what happens, come 3 years from now, there's still going to be rubble and ash and unbuilt homes all over that place. It's going to be the emphasis is going to really be like never before that he just didn't get it done. He was all talk and not right. be able to move. But look, it's going to be a very competitive race. There's no question. A lot of Democrats are going to step up to run.
So Fox did a poll of how Trump's doing, and it's pretty fascinating to see that, you know, in this polarizing time, he's got a situation where he's got 49% approval, which I think is pretty interesting. It's the highest, it's tied for the highest he's ever had. Your thoughts about how he's doing? He's actually underwater in the economy. I think it's temporary till he gets his bill passed and until he comes with the April 2nd reciprocal tariffs.
That's right.
To see it, how the world reacts. Yeah.
So, look, I'm a free trade guy. So I always have a fundamental issue with the tariffs, but I get what he's trying to do. He's trying to get better long-term deals internationally. He's trying to really deal with the fentanyl thing, and it's working in Mexico, by the way. The Canada stuff I have a bigger problem with. April 2nd, what you'll see is maybe of these 15, what they call the dirty countries, the ones that really abuse our system the most, a lot of them will pre-negotiate, I think, out of it to not have the tariffs come into effect on April 2nd. I will give Trump a lot of credit in that he said, look, we might hit a soft recession here. You know, he's not doing the Bidenomics.
That, but yeah.
Well, again,
then who knows,
he's not doing the Bidenomics thing where Biden got out and told everyone that they're just fine, right? He said, we're going to break some things. It's going to be a little bumpy. So he's doing the right thing there. He needs stronger messaging from his allies and friends to explain this, provide a runway politically. A lot of opportunity.
He's stripping it down to the studs in trade-wise, and then he's going to put the insulation in and sheetrock.
Okay, Congress didn't do their job for 25 years, so he's picking up the mantle, right?
Back in a moment with Governor Chris Sununu.
Taking America back.
Canada's been very abusive of the United States for many years.
One ally at a time.
It is an act of economic warfare.
The trade imbalance and our trade deficit has gone up 200+%.
Hey, Canada! Hey, Canada!
With Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back. Governor Chris Sununu, you stepped out of the political fray, decided not to run for president. And then when you said that, I'm not going to run for my, you got a 2-year term.
Yeah.
I'm not going to run for governor again.
Yeah, four terms is enough for anybody.
You turned down running for the Senate one time before, at least.
Yep.
And now it looks like it's going to be an open Senate seat in a year. How do you feel about are you considering running it?
Considering, but I'll try to be very honest with our friends in New Hampshire and down in D.C. who have asked me to run. The door's open a little bit, and I'll tell you what has fundamentally changed, right? In 2022, I said, I'm not running for the Senate because I had Republican U.S. senators coming to me saying, Gov, no one cares about – so I'm doing my Lindsey Graham impersonation because that's the idiot that told me that no one cares about balancing budgets. No one cares about efficiency in government. I'm a budget hawk, right? I don't have income tax or sales tax. We were Doge before Doge was cool, right? We always are fighting for efficiency, and we do it really well. The senators and even Republicans didn't want anything to do with that. And I said, well, screw you. I'm not going down there to be part of a
So that's
a
how
club.
Close it went? If they had a different message to you, you probably would have jumped in?
At someday, maybe I'll write a book, but there's a great story of me, Mike Pence, and Lindsey Graham backstage in Las Vegas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference, and Lindsey's trying to explain to me that fiscal responsibility doesn't matter. He was the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee at the time. Now, what has changed? Completely different. Trump's driving forward on balanced budgets. Congress is looking at being, taking it seriously. How do we find, you know, efficiencies? How do we decentralize government? I love this stuff. So I'm considering it. It's not a huge door. There's a lot of opportunities in the private sector. And I probably wouldn't be able to come on the show as much. So, you know.
Well, no, yes, you would. You'd still come on. Lindsey Graham comes on all the time. So, Governor, a couple of things. Making money is definitely understandable. If you're honest, it's hard to do it. But you could still write books. There's other things you can do. You can speak, can't you?
I do. I do speeches. People have asked me. I don't do the tell-all book thing and bash people. I don't like doing that. I'd rather bash them to their face than in a book. So,
but, I mean,
if I could write the
family
right book,
story is fantastic. Your brother,
the family
story
is great, and I believe the New Hampshire story is great. The right. Live free or die thing, the limited government, local control, lowercase L libertarian thing.
So you know that if that seat's available, it's one of those seats. It's so hard to win if you're a Republican.
Well, it is. It's winnable. People shouldn't think that if it's only me or nothing. Scott Brown is interested in running. Former Senator Scott Brown. I think he'd be great. I think there'd be a lot of other good candidates.
He's a good guy. Yeah.
He's a good guy, and he knows the state. And by the way, you know, we have an all The governor's Republican. I was Republican, obviously. Our House and Senate are Republican-driven. So we win state races as Republicans. We just need the right candidate in the right race to close the deal.
What does your family want you to do?
They want me to make money. Yeah, there's no doubt. The family right now is like, if you do this, let's make sure that we're covering our bases. So,
would you say
you're
more into it than your family?
I don't know about that. I'll come back next week and let you know how that conversation
goes.
I've been avoiding the conversation.
You know, you just don't want to tell me. Governor Sununu, we'll find out if he'll ever be Senator Sununu.
We'll see.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi everyone, Brian Kilmeade here coming your way. This hour we're going to be joined by Lee Zeldin, EPA administrator. They told him he could not cut billions of dollars worth of climate grants. Unbelievable. Really, who's the president? Some district judge or him? Congressman Byron Donalds wants to be Governor Byron Donalds of Florida. What you want to do in life is you want to replace somebody that's not successful. And then as soon as you do, for example, you always want to replace Mayor de Blasio in New York. The worst, lazy, no insight. Took a gold star from Bloomberg, who, even though he was a little controversial, did a really good job as mayor. And then, of course, Rudy Giuliani did a fantastic job as mayor. But you want to replace de Blasio, even though Eric Adams got himself all messed up. For Congressman Byron Donalds, he's replacing the most effective governor maybe in my lifetime in Ron DeSantis. But he thinks he can do it. He's got 17 years of private sector experience. He'll be with us in 15 minutes. And Brett Baer joins us right now, chief political anchor to Fox News, anchor of Special Report, fresh off a big show last night where we talked about energy and more. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brett, first off, what did you glean from Chris Wright yesterday? First off, on those studies show that natural gas fracking did nothing but negative to the environment, burns clean. If I could just put in layman's terms, they knew that and they buried the study with the Biden people.
Pretty amazing if you think about it. I mean, it was a justification to shut off exports of LNG, liquid natural gas. And here is this study that says the climate impacts are negligible and it would be beneficial to the U.S. to do that export. And yet, the study was buried. The administration stopped everything, and this administration is obviously turning that around. I also thought, you know, some of the talk about the meeting with the executives, the oil and gas executives, and that they didn't talk about price, but really talked about regulations and unleashing, the industry, I think was a interesting point because prices are going down, and there is a point where companies are not, you know, they don't make money. He's saying without the regulations and the bureaucracy, the red tape, they'll still be able to really crank it out.
Yeah, and in fact, here is Chris Wright last night with you, Cut 39.
They buried the study, claimed it didn't exist. It was subpoenaed by Congress to get it, and we were able to recover this study. The study ultimately released over a year later has the exact same title, the exact same agenda. It just removed a lot of the pages and data that got the wrong conclusion. They changed some assumptions around, made up some fictitious scenarios to sort of support their agenda. But that's just shameless. Natural gas is not just our fastest growing export. When we have crises or shortages in natural gas, Pakistan shut their schools down because that's how they power their buses. India stops fertilizer production. Europe is at threat of heating and electricity prices. You can't mess with energy for political reasons. This is just critical to the American people.
So I think that he's going to get some cooperation now and also a willing customer in Europe if we can get, as Chris Sununu was telling me last hour, he says our problems is ships. Are we going to have enough ships and transportation to be able to get the natural gas to Europe? But hopefully there's leasing opportunities. But we have the ability to do that. And this energy secretary is going to be allowed to. The other one wasn't.
Yeah, that's true. And listen, you know, this is a guy who really knows his stuff. I mean, in and out. Any question on this front, he has a lot of knowledge and, and knows the industry. I asked about Russia sanctions, you know, that there was a big effort that they put on this thing where you can't use U.S. financial system, U.S. dollars to buy Russian oil. It was a sanction the Biden administration put in place but issued a waiver and never implemented it. The Trump administration implemented it, and it's having an effect on Russia. They're thinking about increasing sanctions on Iran. And my question was, if you do all of that, can U.S. production make up the difference? And he said, not only can it, it will.
Yeah, that would be great. And we know that Doug Burgum is working with Chris Wright at some type of blended interior secretary, something with energy, too. So we'll see where that goes. This is the story, Brett. This week has been the story of the injunction. 64 injunctions of different court cases and district courts slowing down the Trump agenda. He's been remarkably calm, unlike last time where you could see his impatience and hear about him blowing up behind the scenes. He's been very calm about the whole thing. He's not saying I'm going to ignore judges' decisions.
Yeah, and they told Laura Ingraham that. I think he's calm because he knows in the long run they have a good case. You know, the American people voted. They voted overwhelmingly. And part of his campaign was all of these things, cutting back the size and scope of the government, getting out waste, fraud, and abuse, trimming down the massive bureaucracy. That was all stuff that people voted for. So a federal district judge does not have more power than not only the president, but also the Supreme Court and five justices who will eventually hear these cases that make their way up there. So I think we're in for a legal battle, but they feel confident that they're going to win on separation of powers and other articles.
So Saturday night, 261 people, we had board planes and head over to El Salvador. I guess some people think as though they didn't, these illegal immigrant criminals didn't get due process. Are we supposed to give them due process? Where do you stand, Brett, but what is the system that we can agree on that would work?
Yeah, I think it's a real question. I mean, obviously, could there be mistakes as far as somebody being tied to a gang that's not tied to a gang? I suppose, but is there any doubt that anybody in that plane is not an illegal from where they're from? I mean, Secretary Rubio said that's confident. There's a happy medium here, and it's you got to find a way to convince these judges that this is, you know, the way to go forward. It is the immigration falls under a national security run by the executive branch.
Yeah, so I guess we're going to see where this all goes. So now we have a situation where we got this elite businessman who has his power stations blown up. He's got dealerships that are being attacked. Now he's got different Tesla cars, whether you're an individual owner or at a dealership, that are being defiled and defaced. Where's this going? How could you possibly protect every Tesla car? Is there a game plan out there to help Elon Musk's electric vehicle?
It's pretty amazing if you think about it that the left and they're articulating this. You know, Governor Waltz saying he loves watching the stock fall on his phone. I mean, this is a party that was going to mandate electric vehicles, was going to mandate that the emission standards get so high that electric vehicles were the only thing that the big three automakers could do. And now they're literally attacking and calling for the demise of one of the biggest electric car makers in the country. It's bizarre. It's surreal. And I think that, the Justice Department is going to go after each individual case that they see. But in a broad sense, you saw Secretary Lutnick of Commerce say people should buy Tesla stock to support Elon. So I think you're going to see more of those things from the administration.
Brett Baer with us now. So, Brett, I'm going to bring you to an area you're not usually in. We're going to go to world soccer. Yesterday, the president of FIFA said this about America hosting the World Cup in a sport I don't think we've ever got. We've never gotten to the semifinals in, except for once in the 1950s. Cut 45.
What team seems to be favored?
Well, on the club one, which takes place this year, of course, Real Madrid, Manchester City, Bayern Munich, the Germans, Paris Saint-Germain, the French. The big ones are always there, and these clubs are multinationals. They have players from all countries.
U.S.
is coming up. U.S. is coming. Watch the U.S. Some very, very good players playing in Europe, but we need to bring them back here.
So can the U.S. win?
The U.S. can win, yes, with the public behind.
So is that too much pressure? They believe that with Trump behind them, they can win.
No, listen, I think those guys welcome the world stage. It is going to be something, you know, to host that, to have these games in the U.S. and North America. And obviously we'll be hosting on Big Fox Sports. It's a world event that literally billions of people watch. It's truly, truly amazing.
Here's the coach responding to now saying they could win Cup 46.
I saw with Infantino, and Infantino say, "Oh, USA can win the World Cup."
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, because the president asked,
yes,
we can win.
Yeah.
Maybe he need to ask me directly, no, than to Infantino, because I don't believe that Infantino can say 3-4 no names of our player, no.
Pretend I'm President Trump, and if I ask you if you could win the World Cup, what would your answer be to him?
Yes.
Yes.
I will say yes. If he asks me, I say yes, President. With your help, with the fans in behind, hosting the World Cup, all is possible.
That is Coach Pochettino. He was on Sky Sports. So you can imagine if the men actually get as far. The women dominate. But if the men get some far, Brett, you might have to give up your favorite sport of golf and become a soccer fan.
That's true. Very true. I mean, that would be miracle on ice. You know, 1980, that would be...
It would be on that par.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
All right, so Brett, have you named your panel tonight?
I have named my panel. I've got a stable of wonderful analysts.
Right. I'm so tired of hearing individual names. I want generalities. Perfect. You got Brett Fair. That's all you need to know. Brett, thanks so much.
Go.
Appreciate it. Coming up next, Congressman Byron Donalds.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I couldn't believe there was any judge in the country that would want terrorists, a plane turned around over international waters, and return terrorists to the United States. The TDA is an enemy of this country. Many of these people on that flight have raped and murdered women. They're gang members. They have taken over apartment buildings. They have caused havoc in our cities. They have pushed in fentanyl that killed thousands of Americans. These are significant public safety threats, significant national security threats.
Tom Homan upset that plane was asked to turn around, and now a judge is asking by sometime in the next 40 minutes to comply with everything that happened, why that plane took off, where it was at such and such time. They're going to compare it to some app called FlightAware and see if the government could have turned that plane around. But how do you know how much jet fuel was in that plane? Why in a million years would a district judge try to stop some international deal from going down where illegal immigrants leave our country? Let's bring in Congressman Byron Donalds. He's a candidate to be the next Florida governor. First, he wants to get the Republican nomination. Congressman, your thoughts about what happened over the weekend?
My thoughts are clear on this. This district court judge is out of line. He's over his skis. He assumes he speaks for the entire country. He does not. And let's also be very clear that the president has invoked existing law to do what he's doing to deport TDA and other violent gangs and violent people in the United States. And it is not the purview of this federal judge to overturn legislation passed by Congress, signed into law by a president of the United States and executed by this president of the United States.
Do they just want to make sure? How do we tell this judge who was on that plane? Should we get a system together to make sure that we don't catch up, you know, we don't get the wrong person on that plane? Is that what this judge is asking for?
No, what we need to do with this judge is put him back in the box, and he needs to understand the limitations of his bench, and I try to expand that. It's one thing if you're going to talk about the Supreme Court trying to make an interpretation of law, but then that has an interpretation of law and an interpretation of the Constitution. Well, that's something very different. At least you have five justices who have to weigh in on that. But you cannot just have one federal district judge decide immigration policy and, frankly, national security policy for the United States when you have an elected commander in chief where the people have invested those powers. And let's be very clear, this judge can have his own views, and that's all well and good, but the American people have spoken when it comes to the deportation of criminal illegal aliens. They want that done, and Donald Trump is executing the will of the people.
All right, that's absolutely happening. What is your view on Elon Musk and the job he's done? He seems to be paying a huge price.
First, Elon's doing a great service to the United States, and it's really unfortunate that the radical left has decided that if you do a job on behalf of the people that they don't like, that you get targeted. I think that's just insane and crazy. But, you know, honestly, that's typical of the left. Specifically to what Elon's doing, he, and I categorize him because he's a special employee of the federal government, he's essentially a special envoy to focus on the waste in the federal bureaucracy. The same way that Joe Biden used John Kerry as a special envoy for climate change and setting climate deals around the world, that's what Donald Trump is doing with Elon Musk, and he's doing a good job. The other thing I would tell the radical left and Democrats on Capitol Hill, that instead of trying to be obstructionists, instead of trying to foment unrest when there's really no reason for that at all, why don't you work with the administration, work with us to actually make sure that the money we're spending is being spent efficiently and in the national interest and not with pet projects just seeded all through the federal bureaucracy.
You want to be the next governor of Florida. And last night you put up the city of Fort Myers is now preventing ICE from working with local police. How does this happen in Florida and what can you do to change that?
Well, what's happening in Florida is that every local government is going through a memorandum of understanding between their local police departments and with ICE. And so the city council of Fort Myers, for whatever the reasons are, you have three members of that council who decided they didn't want to get to an MOU with ICE. But they're being reminded right now by the citizenry of Lee County and, frankly, all of Southwest Florida and myself, because this is my congressional district, that they don't get to choose if they're going to comply with ICE. Federal law is what it is, and the governor signed into law with the state legislature the rules upon which local law enforcement would coordinate with ICE and execute the 287G program. Once that happened, it was not optional for local government to decide if they wanted to engage or not. Mm-hmm. It is now the duty of them to execute state law in order to coordinate with federal law. So what I know is happening now is that there's probably going to be a special meeting in the city of Fort Myers held tomorrow, and my anticipation is that the city council is going to see the error of their ways and they're going to reverse course.
What was the decision to run for governor? Why is this time right for you? I know 17 years in business, successful congressman, high profile. Why is this time right for you?
Well, for me, politics is not meant to be a lifetime situation. You're supposed to come in, do your job, and then leave. And so, you know, I've been blessed to represent a great district in Southwest Florida. And now when it comes to looking at the state of Florida, Ron DeSantis is terming out. We're going to need a new governor, and you're going to need a governor who's committed to the principles of liberty, the principles of the Constitution, sound business, and a bright economic future, and making sure Florida doesn't just tread water as the best state in the country, but that we take the state to the new heights. And I have the business background, and I have the political background to be able to lead our state into the future. And I just looked at the landscape and said, you know what? I think I should get into this race. I'm honored to have the endorsement of President Trump, the endorsement of Don Jr., the endorsement of Charlie Kirk. I know Governor Scott was on your air talking very nicely about me the other day, and I appreciate his friendship and his support. And we're just going to go county by county and get the votes and the support of every Floridian in our state.
What if Ron DeSantis' wife runs?
Then she runs, and then we'll deal with that as it comes. But, you know, I don't get in these deals to finish second. I get it to finish first.
Right.
And I think that if
you probably want to replace guys like Mayor de Blasio, who's terrible, it's hard to go ahead and follow up a very good governor, isn't it?
It is, but I will tell you that we're blessed with having had great governors in the history of our state over the last 30 years, and we just want to take what they've done, build upon it, and continue a great state.
Congressman Byron Donalds, thank you.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The fastest growing energy source on the planet over the last 15 years is natural gas. The planet is increasingly getting powered by natural gas. And it's the second largest U.S. export after oil and oil products. And it's our fastest growing export. So it's tremendously positive for the U.S. economy. And boy, what I released earlier today was the previous administration had a report that they had produced that showed increased LNG exports would have negligible price impact on domestic gas prices and would reduce greenhouse gas emissions. They didn't like that answer. They buried the study, and then they made a new study very carefully tailored to support their agenda.
And that's wrong. And that's what's got to stop. And hopefully an EPA administrator like Lee Zeldin would stop that. Welcome back, Lee.
Always good to be with you, Brian.
So your thoughts about what the secretary said yesterday, can you expand on that?
Spot on. And the United States produces, transports energy cleaner than so many other countries around the world. Over the course of the last couple decades, emissions have been going down. American innovation only continues to get better. And as we meet with industry leaders, they want to be good stewards of the environment. Listen, there might be some who are an exception, and then there's some type of an enforcement action because they're not doing the right thing. However, that hasn't been my experience in recent weeks since I came onto this job. There's been a lot of conversations with companies that produce energy. They want to be part of unleashing energy dominance. And there's a lot of pride within those companies in being able to do it cleaner, better, more efficient than so many other companies and countries elsewhere. So it's something that we should just hop on the back of and ride it for the American prosperity that I would say that the voters elected, they chose, they're demanding last November 5th and since.
All right. So yesterday, the one thing you're doing, if you go to Doge.com, you guys are all over it at the EPA about programs you want to cut. And now we find out the judges are pushing back. Federal judge issued a temporary restraining order on $14 billion in climate grant funding. And, of course, it's U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan, who had her eyes set on convicting President Trump on one of his Jack Smith cases. The EPA was also, you wanted to terminate $20 billion in other grants. So it must be frustrating for you. I know you're not an attorney, but your thoughts on why you're being stopped?
I'll tell you what is most frustrating is not having accountability over funding. To inherit a system where I don't have eyes on tens of billions of dollars. I'm running an agency that has an annual budget of about $10 billion to operate, yet in 2024, there was over $60 billion being obligated and spent by the EPA. Now, I should be able to come in and know where all the money went, but I don't. But as I learn more, I'm realizing that tens of billions of dollars are going out through self-dealing, conflicts of interest, unqualified recipients, and agreements that are reached where EPA, working with Treasury and OMB in the last administration, deliberately reduced EPA's oversight, And they were doing it right up until the last few days before Inauguration Day. They were amending account control agreements on January 13th for the purpose of removing EPA oversight once we came in. That is the biggest frustration. I refuse to waste tax dollars. I want to be able to sit before you, the president, Congress, the American public, and account, and I don't want to have EPA waste even a single penny. So when a judge comes in or a congressional Democrat comes in and they say that they want me to release funds, as that's what we've heard from a bunch of congressional Democrats, or in this case, you have a D.C. judge that is not recognizing how much of an issue this is, that's greatly concerning because the idea that if we just play this out the way some congressional Democrat demands, then you're essentially saying that you want us to be wasting money. You don't care that we don't have oversight. You want us to get it out to those Democratic donors and former Biden and Obama administration officials, and you don't care if they're unqualified. A lot of these NGOs were brand new. As you've been reporting on, for example, that one Stacey Abrams-linked NGO,
yep.
They only received $100 in 2023. Then they get $2 billion in 2024. $20 billion went through eight pass-through NGOs, and many of those NGOs didn't even exist until this came around with the Inflation Reduction Act. They were formed to take in billions of dollars, and they wouldn't have existed otherwise, and they wouldn't have gotten the money if not for their contacts.
Are you in the middle of the climate fight? You know, we want to be responsible with the environment, but we don't want to change the economy and change the world on unsettled science. Do you feel like your department is in the middle of this fight between Republicans and Democrats?
Well, EPA is certainly right in the middle of this effort in this moment. There, you know, science is very important, and I believe strongly that we can both protect the environment and grow the economy. And the problem that I have observed over the course of these last few decades is that there has been a push where strangulation of the economy is pursued, it is achieved in order to save the planet. I mean, it was about a half dozen years ago that AOC was saying that we had 12 years left on this planet before it was about to end. And it's one thing to have a view of climate change, and you want to debate your positions, your views, and advocate for policies to protect the environment. The problem really ends up becoming next level when you end up getting all levels of power, and with that view of climate change, you're willing to strangulate the economy, and you're acting as if it's a binary choice. And for the people in this country who are struggling to make ends meet, it only is going to become harder. Where you think it's okay, where there's an American choosing between heating their home, filling up their refrigerator with groceries, or being able to get their prescription drugs. It's a choice between those three, and there's nothing that we can do about it because the planet is about to end in 6 years. That's where I draw the line, and I think the American public drew the line last November 5th.
I think so, too. So you're trying to find the money. Do you are working with forensic accountants to do this? Because there's only – I mean, have you been staffed up?
Yeah, well, we have – the good news is that they were just – getting this money out the door in the last half of 2024.
With the Inflation Reduction Act, right?
Correct. So the money was parked, $20 billion was parked in an outside bank to give to these eight NGOs. These eight NGOs, when they hand the money off to other entities, many of them pass-throughs as well, that's when we start reducing oversight as to where the money was going to go. But fortunately, we came in, realized what the plan was. We were alerted to it by a Biden EPA political appointee who was caught on camera talking about how they were tossing gold bars off the Titanic. And we located the gold bars before a lot of them were tossed. So it was $20 billion that was sent to the bank. There was still over $16 billion at the bank once that money got frozen. The money right now is currently frozen still. It's over $16 billion of the $20 billion. This is being investigated by the DOJ and FBI. It's being investigated by EPA, Office of Inspector General. And this is why we acted as quickly as we did, because we knew that the system was set up to tie our hands behind our back. And if we didn't freeze it right away, if we didn't investigate it right away, as each day goes by, we would see tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars disappear each day without oversight. So we stopped it, fortunately, early enough, with over $16 billion still sitting there at the bank.
So Lee, right now you have a series of cases, and I guess their thought is the Inflation Reduction Act passed. You don't have a right to go in there and spend money on stuff that Congress said should be spent a certain way. What are your parameters? What is constitutional?
Well, now the money's expired. The grants, I've terminated the eight grants with these eight NGOs,
right,
and the money is expired. So I can't just go turn around and spend the money on something else. This is going to require conversations between the White House and Congress on next steps. And listen, I'll spend money however Congress and the White House decides money needs to get spent. My most important parameter is that I just don't want to waste any money. And that's not saying I disagree with how a dollar is getting spent. I voted against the Inflation Reduction Act. It is irrelevant whether or not I thought the Inflation Reduction Act was a good idea or whether or not disappropriation was a good idea. That doesn't matter. What does matter is that I'm not going to be part of breaking the law. And I believe that this scheme is criminal. And I believe that the taxpayer dollars are precious. This budget deficit in this country needs to be confronted. Separately from all of this, working with DOGE, I've canceled over $2 billion worth of grants that were going towards DEI and environmental justice. That's over $2 billion on top of everything else that we're discussing. So the partnership with Doge has been fantastic. But I'm not looking to take money away from some left-wing activist group and give it to a right-wing activist group. This isn't about my opinion of how the money gets spent. This is about me doing my job as a good steward, an exceptional steward of tax dollars.
True. So what should you be spending it on?
So, I mean, listen, Congress Congress appropriates these funds. I would say this generally. The argument of environmental justice that you hear one argue is that there's some community that's been left behind. There's an environmental issue that needs to be dealt with. All right. That'll get a lot of bipartisan support. Mm-hmm. But what happens is, in the name of environmental justice, in the name of climate change, money is going to be spent on some left-wing politically connected activist group to tell us that there's the environmental issue that needs to be remediated. So my general principle is that if you're spending a dollar to deal with an environmental issue, it should go directly towards remediating the environmental issue. You should not be spending the dollar on some organization to tell us that there's an issue that needs to be dealt with. That's one of my big general issues. Now, I spent Monday in Missouri in the St. Louis area with Senator Josh Hawley. And there's an area there contaminated through radioactive waste tied to the Manhattan Project where generations have been getting sick. Senator Hawley has been fighting hard for these community residents. The government is clearly liable for this contamination and not notifying the public and a lot of damage it's caused to so many lives. I would rather spend a dollar on remediating that directly on the ground than spending a dollar on some organization to tell us that there's an issue in St. Louis that Senator Hawley has been speaking about and maybe we need to do something about it. Yeah, no crap. Let's just spend a dollar on fixing the issue.
I hear you. You got your hands full. Also, you're fighting in court to not spend waste the public's money. I'm sure they appreciate that. If you want to see what Lee's doing, go to doge.com.gov, and you'll see everything that's out there. Administrator, great to talk to you.
Always great. Thanks, Brian.
All right, Lee Zeldin, former congressman from Long Island. Now he's EPA administrator. Spent a lot of time in the White House. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
There's a website that's trying to dox Tesla owners across the country and saying they're only going to take down personal information when people show that they've sold their cars. What's the administration going to do about that?
I haven't seen that website, but we certainly think it's despicable, the violence that has taken place against Tesla, the company, its employees, and also just Americans who have chosen to drive an electric vehicle. Many of them are Democrats, by the way.
Yeah, because you got to think left-wingers are the ones who believe that electric cars can only save the planet. And that's what's happening, the attacking of Tesla owners. Joe Lonsdale, another self-made multi-billionaire who's been friends with Elon Musk for 30 years, said that it makes him more determined than ever to continue to work with the government. He started Palantir and some other projects. He says he has been harassed. His companies have been hit, not nearly to the severity of Musk. But with guys or women, when you become the top of your game, you welcome this challenge. You don't shrink from it. The problem is you get pressure from shareholders when you're a public company. I mean, you own 13% of it and you own Tesla. And it's a solid bet. And now they got autonomous vehicles. Now they're spinning out with robots. And you say to yourself, this is a good bet. I'm going to put my mutual fund in there, or I'm going to invest in that. And you look up and it's down 40% because Elon Musk decided to work for Donald Trump. To me, that is really problematic, and it's sad about this situation as we see it right now. Musk, people act like he's rattled. That's the way he talks. If you go back and look at an old Joe Rogan podcast and watch it, that's the way he talks. He has a little bit of a halting delivery. He also thinks. He'll actually go quiet for like 20 seconds and come up with a statement, a little like Jordan Peterson. But some of the pushback, I think we need to see these guys arrested when they blow up these cars at a dealership or throw a Molotov cocktail through a showroom window. We need to see these guys arrested. These and women, by the way, they need to be put in jail. They need to be facing 10 years. And all of them maybe get a year off if they tell us exactly who paid them, exactly who funded it, exactly who organized them. Then you'll see some people waking up. Here's Camping World CEO Marcus Lemonis. Cut 12.
It's an argument of contradiction and an argument of jealousy. If Elon Musk spent many, many years trying to figure out how to improve the carbon footprint, was an innovator as it relates to bringing, you know, electric vehicles to the market, and now make him the enemy of the state is quite frankly preposterous. The fact that, you know, we're very focused on cutting waste and eliminating things makes a huge difference. And so we really want to get everybody focused. What I see there on your screen of cars burning is actually a tragedy. And whoever's doing that kind of nonsense needs to be brought to justice right now.
Yeah, but they're laughing with Jimmy Kimmel and they're laughing on The Daily Show and the crowd is cheering as these cars blow up. Here's Rachel Maddow, cut 14, about Elon Musk.
What did that letter say again? Dear Elon, after your referral, as is my practice, I will begin an inquiry. They are apparently using this part of the U.S. Justice Department as a private police force for the president's top campaign donor when he is on private property going after a private entity. They are threatening federal criminal investigation and prosecution if you don't comply. And they're threatening to revoke federal contracts of private armed security if private armed security doesn't join in the armed takeover of these private entities.
So Elon Musk is going through with 200-man force with Doge, and they say it's a private company going through the government. So Rachel Maddow is the only one with half-decent ratings on that channel. Gets some obscene amount of $30 million to host for, I think, 1 hour a week. Maybe she's got to work 2 days a week. Elon Musk is not going to stop. And just when you see, and just like Howard Lutnick recommended, go on his website, look at these Tesla robots. There's nobody ahead of him. He's putting chips in brains to get people to walk again. There's nobody ahead of him. Starlink has connected the whole world. There's nobody ahead of him.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.